Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Scientists are finding that molecules in pomegranate have incredible anti-aging benefits. Tufts University, published in Nature Metabolism. That's just the beginning of a lot of material today, always from peer-reviewed journals, always at respected institutions, showing you how we can live a longer and healthier life. Then today, I'm going to have a very unusual guest appearance from William Pepper. And he has given a talk called The Execution of Martin Luther King. I listened to this talk last evening, and almost everything in it I was unaware of. And mind you, William Pepper is probably the most knowledgeable lawyer on the planet concerning Martin Luther King. He spent 25 years of his life full-time investigating the truth behind his assassination. But it was not the assassination that was the most important part of this discussion. It was the first 20 minutes dealing with how Martin Luther King was going through an airport, saw a copy of Rampart's magazine, which was a San Francisco-based magazine like Covert Action Quarterly or The Atlantic, Harper's, did really good pieces. And it dealt with May Lai and the story, and that was William Pepper's article. So he got a hold of William Pepper, had a conversation with him, and that created a very unusual relationship where he wanted Pepper to come to his church and speak to his congregation. And he said, well, why would they believe me about anything? It's your church, your congregation. I'll leave it there. All of this stuff is new. No one's ever heard this before. So this is an honor Martin Luther King Day with a discussion that no one in the world is going to have, but you will. Also today I heard Biden making a statement justifying his wanting not to be in Iraq, getting out of Iraq. Unfortunately, that is not the case. We will play you his clips from 2003 and 2004 supporting the war, and then how a UN inspector tried to get in to explain to Biden and the other neocons that they were wrong. And they were refused that opportunity, which meant that the fix was in from the beginning. There was going to be a war, people like it or not. You need to know this because the left has protected Biden, promoted Biden. The corporate left, the Hillary Clinton left, the Bill Clinton left, the Barack Obama left, they need Biden as president. A, it would protect them from all of the crimes against humanity they engaged in, from everything they did, which was wrong, but also it would protect Wall Street, the arms manufacturers, Big Pharma. Definitely going to protect the credit card industry because he was one of their major sponsors. So everything would be just great if Biden were elected, except he would be one of the worst presidents in history. And it's important you know that he is a pathological liar. Know it now, then you can vote for him or not, but at least you'll know the truth about him. So we have a lot to share on today's program, and of course we always begin with the latest on health and healing. In the recently completed anti-aging group, we were giving what the scientific literature that we have been reviewing for months, every day, full time, thousands of articles supported. The idea was to give people about 40 servings of fruits and vegetables a day to see what it would do combined with moderate fasting, 15 hours of fasting a day, and then 48 hours of fasting from solid food over the weekend, and then put it in juice form so it was immediately bioavailable. And now there's this new study that showed we could have also used pomegranates. In the next study, we will be. In the advanced study, we're definitely going to put pomegranates top of the list. In fact, we're contacting granite makers now and asking, could we get a discount if we bought a ton of it? Because they're going to be using pomegranate juice probably six times a day based upon brand new studies that we've just found. This is the latest. There have been hundreds of studies that have established that eating a pomegranate could help slow down the aging process. But this one found that it could also have very specific anti-aging benefits. The paper was published, as I mentioned, in Nature Metabolism. It's the first ever in human clinical trial showing that what is called urothalin, U-R-O-T-H-I-L-I-N-A, which is a chemical in the pomegranate, has anti-aging benefits, mainly due to its influence on the mitochondria and cellular health. Now, the urothalin A is a natural microflora-derived metabolite found in pomegranate, and the metabolite is shown to stimulate what is called mitophagy. Mito, M-I-T-O, phagy, F-H-A-G-Y, the targeted degradation of damaged mitochondria and improve muscle health in older animals and hence older humans. So now we know something else, and all of you know it as well. Now, we knew that there were polyphenols in there. These polyphenols, specifically the elatitins, when digested in the body, the polyphenols are converted into urothelin A inside your gut. And so just very beneficial. Also, research from the life science department of the Swiss Institute of Bioinformatics used a group of sedentary elderly patients for the study. They divided them in different groups, and they found that those that used the pomegranates on a daily basis had a marked difference in the person's blood and muscle tissue. So that's good. Also, from the University of British Columbia, it is estimated that a minimum of 9 million women use one of the most popular forms of birth control, the pill. Now, just a history lesson. The pill was developed in 1950, and it was a critical advancement in reproductive health and women's liberation. But it can also produce a variety of side effects, including weight gain and acne and fibrocystic breasts, and also cancer of the ovaries. Now, recent examinations of this now add in depression. They used 1,236 women from the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, and they found that those who used the pill met the criteria for major depression in a statistically significant number. This was published in the Journal of Child Psychology and Psychiatry. So that's something, at least it should be understood. So what this means is this. If you use the pill in adolescence, does it result in higher risk of depression? And oral contraception suppress the body's own production of hormones such as testosterone and estrogen, and it's possible, the research suggests, that such changes during the important developmental period of adolescence could contribute to long-term increases in depression risk. That's what it says. Therefore, my suggestion is find safer barrier methods, and those do exist. From the Chinese Academy of Medical Sciences comes research on lycopene, L-Y-C-O-P-E-N-E. It attenuates chronic prostatitis, chronic pelvic pain syndrome by inhibiting oxidative stress and inflammation. In lay language, it just means that lycopene, that's what you're getting in watermelon, raspberries, strawberries, tomatoes, red plums, red apples, can turn off inflammation in the body, turn it down. And we know that inflammatory biomarkers are an absolute indicator of disease, progression, and premature aging. From Cambridge University in the United Kingdom comes a study about becoming less active and gaining weight. And leaving school and getting a job both lead to a drop in the amount of physical activity. And what becoming a mother is linked to increased weight gain, conclude two published studies today that says that many people tend to put on weight as they leave adolescence and move into adulthood. And this is the age when the levels of obesity increase the fastest. The weight gain is related to changes in diet and physical activity and behavior across the life events of early adulthood, including moving from school to further education and athleticism in school to full-time in employment and starting new relationships and having children. So writing in Obesity Reviews, researchers from the Center for Diet and Activity Research at Cambridge looked at changes. And so here's the deal. When you are making a transition from anything where you've been active to one where you're going to become less active, the price you pay is obesity. But with obesity comes stress upon the heart, arterial sclerosis, atherosclerosis, all forms of pre-diabetic conditions, metabolic syndrome, high blood pressure, and how it manifests into an out critical event like a stroke or heart attack or embolism depends upon your own particular set of risk factors. So what do? We actually become more athletic. So you put it into your schedule. If you're a parent, you can exercise together. If you're a single person and you have a job, then make sure that you do your exercise before you go to work or when you come home from work. But you've got to get it in your day. Now, a lot of people don't exercise. They start feeling tired. And what do? They go to caffeine. The University of Western Ontario just did a study showing that a fast walk, just walking briskly for as little as 20 minutes, can provide your working memory just as much energy as your cup of coffee. In fact, the same recent study showed that exercise can also reduce the negative effects of caffeine withdrawal, like headaches, fatigue, and crankiness. The study entitled The Effects of Caffeine in Acute Aerobic Exercise on Working Memory and Caffeine Withdrawal was published in Nature Scientific Reports. So a fast walk in the morning, a fast walk maybe at lunchtime, and a fast walk in the early evening all give you energy and allow you to withdraw from the need for caffeine. How many times have you heard, well, this is just a low dose of radiation, it's not going to hurt you? Okay. Erasmus University and Oncode Institute in the Netherlands suggest that's not true. They published an article in PLOS One, Genetics. Common medical imaging procedures using low dose of radiation that are believed historically to be safe finds that in human cell cultures, these doses create breaks that allow extra bits of DNA to integrate into the chromosome. Now, scientists have known for a long time that exposing cells to high doses of ionizing radiation generates mutations by creating double-strand breaks that let in external segments of DNA. And these extraneous fragments of DNA can occur in the nucleus left over from the natural process, such as genomic DNA repair and viral infections. In the new study, researchers investigated whether low doses of ionizing radiation have damaging side effects by irradiating human and mouse cells grown in the lab. And when they took a look, the answer was yes. So just like alcohol, remember for decades and decades, people said, well, I got to have alcohol every day. My doctor suggests it's good for my heart. I'll never forget a guy came into my office once over in 83rd, where we were for, 27 years. And he was a Wall Street lawyer, he said. And he and his doctor could not figure out why his heart was getting worse. And now he was suffering from a cardiomyopathy. And so he said, my diet's good. And everything else seems all right. We don't know what. So my wife, who listens to your radio show, says, why don't you go talk with Gary Null about it? So I said, well, you say you have a good diet. Oh, yeah, I got a good diet. What's your diet? Well, he didn't have breakfast. He had coffee and toast. And then I explained what coffee does to the brain, what coffee does to the heart, what coffee does to the hydrochloric acid in your stomach, causing GERD, and how it's a diuretic. And wouldn't you know, he took a couple vitamins in the morning with his coffee. And I explained this could go right out of the body. And then the toast creates acrylamides, the browning of the bread. So those are pro-cancer and pro-inflammatory. Nothing in his diet was healthy. But then he told me he took two drinks of alcohol a day, and the drink of his choice, and the doctor said it was fine, was bourbon. Well, that's 80% alcohol. You might as well be drinking isopropyl alcohol, rubbing alcohol. And when I explained to him how there is no such thing as good alcohol, he's about every doctor suggesting you got to have alcohol twice a day. I said, well, they're all wrong. They're idiots. They're lazy. They don't do any homework. They don't have time. They're conditioned. They're robotic. It doesn't take anything to memorize something and memorize it to a degree that you're able to regurgitate it back. Try going for a PhD, but you don't get your PhD unless you create mastery of field, meaning you have to contribute something new and original to the field. I said, do you think these people are going to be critical thinkers and ask, gee whiz, does alcohol really harm us? Well, I heard that it was good, and then everybody gets in line with consensus. I said, I went to France because this is where all this nonsense started, like an urban legend. And there they found that the French that have a lot of cholesterol-producing foods in their diet, like cheeses, for example, they drink wine. And therefore, there must be something in the wine that mitigates the LDL cholesterol and the VLDL, very low-density lipoprotein, which creates massive amounts of oxidative stress and therefore causes heart disease. They don't have a lot of heart disease, even though a lot of the French smoke, and they have a high dairy diet. So then that was translated from having a glass of red wine to having alcohol. So by the time this translation morphed into the American parlance, it was just have yourself alcohol twice a day. So people didn't distinguish whether they had a beer at 2% alcohol or bourbon at 60 or 80%. Now, with each glass of alcohol, with higher degrees of alcohol content, you're destroying about a million brain, million liver, million heart, million kidney cells. And you can't grow these back. So I said when I was in France, I found that everybody had plates of grapes. They love grapes. They eat them. Like you might have some donuts, they would have grapes. And in Italy, it's the same thing. They commonly finish a meal with a piece of fruit. You know, a pear, apple, whatever they have. And the French love to eat organic things that they've grown themselves. And they're very smart. You would like to think we're the smartest people in the room. We're not. And all over the world, there are people living longer and healthier lives and have better societies and better democracies and better everything than we do. But we have better technology, therefore we must be smarter. We conflate the two. So I said, when was the last time you went into an American home and you saw a plate of fruit on a table that they could snack on throughout the day? And also I visited people who made their own wine, which was virtually a non-alcoholic wine. It was just a natural ferment. The only alcohol is like the tiny percentage of alcohol you might get from making apple cider vinegar. But they're probiotic. Grapes that are fermented are probiotic. Apples that are fermented are probiotic. So therefore, you're getting a huge amount of prebiotic and prebiotic bacteria going into the intestine, which helps your heart and helps your brain. So that said, I put him on a non-alcoholic diet, having him have probiotics, and then a special protocol for the heart. None of these things was his doctor aware of, but the doctor says, look, try it. Nothing else is working. And then 2 months later, his heart was normal. It was just one person. That myth still exists today, even though we're fully aware we shouldn't consume any alcohol at all. From China Medical University, which is in Taiwan, published in the peer-reviewed journal Clinical Psychological Science, the essential fatty acid deficiency is higher in children with ADHD. Now, I believe that what we're calling ADHD frequently is due to vaccine damage that is lower on the spectrum than full autism spectrum disorder. You see, autism is not a disease. It's a syndrome. And on a syndrome, you can go from mild, trouble learning, delayed speech, delayed communication skills when you can speak, to full-blown Asperger's and inability to communicate and just engage in repetitive motion. I have seen so many children that when we neutralize the effects of the vaccines through chelating out and then replacing it with methylated nutrients and then rebuilding their gut microbiome, they were normal. In fact, I actually did a clinical study on it. But the essential fatty acids are very important. Therefore, to help any child diagnosed with ADHD or ADD, make sure they're getting adequate omega-3 fatty acids, and that can help them. And that's what the study showed, by the way. Clinical study, very well done one. Also from the University of California, San Diego, an article published by the American Journal of Epidemiology shows too much sitting, too little exercise, accelerates your biological aging. It's that simple. Most people in the United States, according to the University of California School of Medicine, report that any woman who sits more than 10 hours a day with low physical activity have cells that are biologically older by 8 years. 8 years older. Well, think of all the jobs where women sit for 6 hours a day and then sit commuting, going home in a car, subway, bus, sit when they're at home. So the average woman sits far more than 10 hours a day. So what we're saying here is that the average woman could gain an additional 8 years of life if she were active throughout the day and designed those desks where you can stand. So you got to do physical activity throughout the day. Do not be sedentary. You pay a price for it. And finally, from Brown University comes a study published in the respected Journal of Cancer Epidemiology and Biomarkers and Prevention. Guess what? Here's what it says. Quote, alcohol has been linked to several different cancers, some more strongly than others. Now a study adds a new type of cancer to the list. It is not one that I would have expected. Recently, researchers from Brown University reported that drinking, even in moderate amounts, is associated with a higher rate of melanoma, the deadliest form of skin cancer. Okay. There you are. Doesn't matter what kind of alcohol you drink. Even drinking wine gives you a 13% increased risk of melanoma. So, I wrote a book, Alcohol Nutrition, which was very popular back in the 1970s. Did a lot of research on alcohol. Just one more reason why we shouldn't be drinking it. We're 25 minutes into our program. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to go to first the UN inspector challenging Joe Biden that everything he is saying today about his war resistance and his reluctance, they're all lies. Shouldn't surprise anybody, but I want you to hear the Joe Biden in his own words and then hear the inspector in his words, and then you'll know the truth. Your time is up.
from the devil's cut. You broke my heart, there's no way back. Move right out of here, baby, go on, pack your bags. Just who do you think you are? Stop acting like some kind of star. Just who do you think you are?
Democratic presidential debate in Iowa. Joe Biden said that he never intended to authorize the Iraq war when he voted for it back in 2002.
Joe and I listened to what Dick Cheney and George Bush and Rumsfeld had to say. I thought they were lying. I didn't believe them for a moment. I took to the floor. I did everything I could to prevent that war. Joe saw it differently.
Vice President Biden.
I was asked to bring 156,000 troops home from that war, which I did. I led that effort. It was a mistake to trust that they weren't going to go to war. They said they were not going to go to war. They said they were just going to get inspectors in. The world, in fact, voted to send inspectors in, and they still went to war. From that point on, I was in the position of making the case that it was a big, big mistake. And from that point on, I moved to bring those troops home.
But Biden's explanation that he just wanted to authorize UN weapons inspectors, not a war, is undermined by his own statements. Speaking in July 2003, months after the U.S. invaded Iraq, Biden praised then-President George W. Bush and said he would have voted the exact same way.
Some of my own party have said that it was a mistake to go to Iraq in the first place and believe that it's not worth the cost, whatever benefit may flow from our engagement in Iraq. But the cost of not acting against Saddam, I think, would have been much greater. And so is the cost, and so will be the cost, of not finishing this job. The President of the United States is a bold leader, and he is popular. 9 months ago, I voted with my colleagues to give the President of the United States of America the authority to use force. And I would vote that way again today.
Well, to discuss Joe Biden's actual record when it comes to U.S. regime change in Iraq, I spoke earlier to Scott Ritter. He is a former UN weapons inspector in Iraq, a former U.S. Marine Corps intelligence officer, and the author of the book Dealbreaker, Donald Trump and the Unmaking of the Iran Nuclear Deal. Scott Ritter, welcome to Pushback. You have extensive experience, not just in Iraq as a former UN weapons inspector, but also with Joe Biden specifically. What did you make of his rationale today, his explanation for his vote back in 2002 to authorize the Iraq War?
Well, it's a completely disingenuous a statement. Joe Biden is a man who, from the very beginning, was a proponent of regime change in Iraq. He wasn't a proponent of the disarmament of Iraq. When I first encountered Joe Biden back in 1998, he strangely opposed the notion of inspection-driven confrontation with Iraq, not because it was bad policy, but because it was something to put his political master, then President Bill Clinton, in a bad light. So his entire position in 1998 was, a political position, not one based upon a reality. And yet, when we take a look at his vote in September of 2002, he had gone completely 180 degrees. He now was speaking about the need for compelled access to inspection sites by inspectors, or else there would be, consequences. But the problem was, 1998, we had viable weapons inspections and capability in place, and he wouldn't let them do their job. When he articulated the sudden conversion to supporting inspectors in 2002, there were no weapons inspectors in Iraq. So now inspections were literally being used as a false flag to justify military action for the purpose of regime change. And that's what Biden needs to be honest about. He never supported the weapons inspection process. He always supported regime change. And to say something different today is just a bald-faced lie.
So let me go to a clip of Biden from July 2003. This is after the Iraq invasion, well after his vote to authorize the Iraq invasion. And contrary to what he says now about how he never voted for war, he just voted to give the U.S. leverage to enforce inspections. This is Joe Biden after the Iraq war saying that he would have voted the exact same way.
9 months ago, I voted with my colleagues to give the President of the United States of America the authority to use force. And I would vote that way again today. It was a right vote then, and it'd be a correct vote today.
So that's Joe Biden in July 2003, a blatant contradiction of what he's trying to say now. Now, Skywriter, you were in Iraq before the invasion, trying to secure inspections. And what do you make of Joe Biden's argument now that the Iraq war vote, the authorization to use force, was just a way of putting pressure on Iraq, giving the U.S. leverage to enforce inspections?
We have to remember that in 2002, you know, Joe Biden was, you know, the minority leader in the Senate on the Armed Service or on the Foreign Relations Committee. This is a man who was plugged in. He was in the know. And we also have to put this in perspective. The debate taking place within the Bush administration at the time was not whether or not to support inspections. It was about going to war. In April of 2002, Paul Wolfowitz, who was a Deputy Secretary of Defense at the time, and Richard Armitage traveled to NATO to try and strong arm NATO into supporting an American push for war on Iraq. And it was interesting because at that time I was actually, NATO reached out to me and asked me to come and give a presentation to counter that. And I did so. And as a result of my presentation, 9 members of NATO signed formal letters to the United States condemning or complaining that they had been lied to by Wolfowitz and Armitage and asking the United States to explain why they, you know, why this was taking place. I was rewarded by that, by the way, with Nicholas Burns, the ambassador to NATO at the time, condemning me as a known enemy of the United States. But when I came back from the NATO trip, it hit me that, you know, maybe it was time for the United States Senate to have hearings, very serious hearings, along the lines of what had transpired in September 1998 to address this very issue. What is the threat posed by Iraq in terms of weapons of mass destruction? Is it worthy of military intervention? I reached out to some of the critical senators there, Senator Chuck Hagel, John Kerry, Richard Lugar, and Joe Biden, to try and get to see if there could be a hearing. I was told by everybody at the time that it's not the right time for hearings. War isn't on the horizon. It's not, there's just no need. I actually spent all of June and July of 2002 traveling around the United States to the various capital cities of these various senators, meeting with the editorial boards of the leading newspapers, trying to get them to write op-eds in favor of hearings, and many of them did. And by the end of July, Richard Lugar and Joe Biden had felt the pressure because suddenly they wrote an op-ed in the Washington Post reversing their position. Suddenly hearings became the thing that had to happen. And it was a very rushed hearing. They scheduled them for early August. I tried very hard to be summoned by the Senate for hearings. They refused to have me on. Instead, they brought in a panel of witnesses who basically rubber stamped their case that Iraq was pursuing weapons of mass destruction, that weapons inspections didn't work, and that the only possible solution to this problem was getting rid of Saddam Hussein. So it became a rubber stamp for war.
So there you have it. Now, mind you, we have Biden being shown to contradict himself on dozens of major issues. Yet this doesn't seem to bother at all and is fully supported by the mainstream corporate Democratic community. So we're just presenting you with the truth. In a moment, a rare, unheard interview with Mr. Pepper, who you're going to find new information you never knew about Martin Luther King. Just want to tell you, however, I have a brand new product I've just created. I'm introducing it today. It's not a powder. It's capsules. Therefore, it's far less expensive. It's detox. It's vegan capsules. Now, what's in the product is unique because If you look at one of the things we try to do when getting someone healthy, we try to take a look at the full burden on their body and on their life, from their lifestyle and the choices they've made. No one lives a perfect life. We all make mistakes. These indiscretions can cause us to have major diseases later in life. It's as if there's a time clock ticking down to zero, and zero is death, or zero is a heart attack, or zero is a stroke, or zero is an embolism, or zero is a cancer, and we're not ever aware of this clock. We just think we have all the time in the world. We don't. So the very first thing I did when I was helping the people in personal counseling and health support groups, in retreats, is detox, cleanse and detoxify. And for everyone who can't be at one of those, then this is the best thing to help you on your way. I'm giving you apple, pectin, buckthorn bark, burdock root, cascara sagrada, dandelion root, fennel, apple fiber, garlic, ginger, golden seal, hibiscus, kelp, licorice extract, marshmallow, broccoli extract, horseradish, chlorophyll, turmeric, yellow dock root, Zolingia, sarsaparilla, rose hips, red clover, prickly ash bark, peppermint, Oregon grapefruit, and orange peel. These are the really superstars of helping the body with its need to detoxify. So it's a brand new product, and today you're also getting it to help you in your journey, an award-winning documentary, Detoxification, a Natural Approach, which takes you step by step through the cleansing process, the foods, the juices, what you have to do to put your body right in lifestyle and behavior modification. Now, normally this package would cost you $84.98. It's only $39.99. That's it. $39.99. At least while, you know, it lasts. And I'm going to give you a number to call to get this very brand new product, this detox capsules. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. It'll be shipped out today. And by the way, since we've been doing all of our own packaging and shipping, and Josh, who heads the warehouse, we haven't had a complaint in months. Before, we had to have someone else do it at an outside location. We had no control over it. So you order today, we'll get it out today. So call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065, because you want to start a journey of health, you have to cleanse and detoxify. You can't just add something new in. You have to undo the damage already done. This detox capsule, vegan capsule, help you do it. Brand new, just announced today. 877-627-5065. Also, I'm going to be hiring a personal assistant full of 3 days a week, good salary. Qualifications, you've got to be able to handle multitasking, working on multiple different projects as I travel around the world doing my filming and investigative reporting. You've got to be the person that can take care of a lot of stuff in the office, because everyone in our office is, they're working to the max. So you have to be good with people, smart. If you want to be considered, you'll call 646-926-5422 and leave your name and your background. Okay? Now, if you've just joined us, we're going to play a clip from William Pepper, who did not believe that there was a conspiracy to kill Martin Luther King, who believed James Earl Ray acted alone. This is an hour plus long, and this has nothing to do with the two-hour special we did as a press conference 2 years ago with Pepper on who killed Martin Luther King. And step by step, this is the before that, and you can hear the whole thing, watch it as well, by going to, and so write this down so you can watch this as well. You go to, let's see what it is here. I think it's, for some reason I don't have it in front of me. YouTube.com/PRNFM. YouTube.com/PRNFM. Now to the story about Martin Luther King. They got him into the war in Vietnam, and that helped get him killed. Interesting how this plays out when you hear the whole story.
The story, which, however sad it is and however indicative it is of the pervasive sickness of this our native land, in a very real sense, this saga begins in Vietnam. I was a journalist there in 1966, and I traveled throughout the country until my presence became a bit intolerable. And I came back to the United States and then published. And Martin King read one of the articles that was written in a magazine called Ramparts. It's January 1967 issue of Ramparts called The Children of Vietnam. Some of you may remember it. It's an old San Francisco-based muckraking magazine. To understand the horror of Vietnam, the passion that one had to feel for that ancient land and those magnificent people, one has to resort to photographs to show what happened, and poetry, because prose is never sufficient. And Martin was moved by the photographs in that piece, and eventually by the poetry that he had me recite to his congregation. And that poem was one that some of you may or may not have heard. It's, "I come and stand at every door, but no one hears my silent plea. I stand and yet remain unseen, for I am dead, for I am dead. I am only seven, though I died in My Lai long ago. I'm seven now as I was then. When children die, they do not grow. My hair was scorched by swirling flame. My eyes grew dim, my eyes grew blind. Death came and turned my bones to dust. And that was scattered by the wind. All that I ask is but for peace. You fight today, so that the children of this world may live and grow and laugh and play." Now the children of My Lai and their mothers and their grandparents were of course slaughtered one day in the middle of March, about the time that Bobby Kennedy decided he would declare for the presidency. On almost the very day he made his declaration, in March 1968, My Lai went on, only to be discovered by the Western world almost a year later. But My Lai was one village of hundreds. And when Martin King stumbled upon his January subscription to Ramparts at the Atlanta airport, as he was heading off to the West Indies, going through his post, and he came on these photographs, he pushed it away. Pushed away the food that was in front of him and the post that was in front of him and the magazine that was in front of him. And he froze. And Bernard Lee, his bodyguard, said, "What, Martin, what's wrong? What's something wrong with your food?" And he said, "No, there's nothing wrong with my food, Bernard. I haven't tasted it, but I'll never enjoy food so long as this war continues." Now, he'd had the seeds growing within him for a number of years about this war in Vietnam. And he'd had the compassion growing within him for a number of years about the wretched of the earth and their plight when he was in India and he saw poverty that he had never seen before. And he was inclined to oppose this war. But then all of a sudden it came together at the Atlanta airport. And he said he would have to do this. So he asked then to meet with me. And I opened the files to him on a first time on a car trip from Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island to Cambridge, Massachusetts, where we were to preside over the opening of a Vietnam summer group. And as he went through the residue of materials, he couldn't contain himself and he started to weep. Remember that. So deeply was he touched by what we were doing to those people. And everything I'm telling you tonight about that experience all those years ago, remember, 36 years ago, I want you to think about today and what we were about to do once again. Because it doesn't seem as though the world has changed very much, at least not in these national boundaries. So he said then, right, I've got to now take this position and I've got to formalize it. And that was, of course, to be done on April 4th, 1967, 1 year to the day before he was killed. But he said, I'm going to lose all of the support I've had in the civil rights movement. All the leaders will walk away from me. And all of the media will start to condemn me. I will be called a traitor. And I will have no one to whom I can turn, except perhaps my congregation and my brothers and sisters in SCLC. He said, but you know, Bill, I'm a little worried about my congregation because they know me as a pastor and as a civil rights leader. And now I'm coming into a realm of activity which is taking on the government of the United States that has done the most for civil rights in terms of legislation of any government in the history of this country. I'm having to take on the Johnson administration and opposing that war. And that's, my people are going to have a concern about that. So I want you to come down to Ebenezer Baptist Church and I want you to take the pulpit and I want you to speak to my people. And I want you to tell them why I have to oppose this war. And I thought he went around the bend. I said, you want this white kid from the north, I was just a little more than a kid, to come down and talk to your people, tell them why you have to oppose this war. Martin, these are your people. Yeah. They might not even understand how I pronounce words. And he waved his finger in front of my face. I always remember this. And he said, no. He said, you've been there. You've seen it. You come and you tell them why their pastor has a moral obligation to oppose the actions of this government against this people. And I couldn't say very much for that. I went down and I did speak that Sunday. Bishop Pike had been the guest preacher the week before, Bishop of California, and I don't know if I did any good, but at least I did what he asked me to do, as I usually did during the course of that last year, and that was the only year that I knew him, was that last year. Then, on April 15th, 1967, he spoke at the United Nations, in front of the United Nations at the plaza, and came out forcefully against the war. Following this magnificent speech on April 4th, he spoke on April 15th. I introduced him that day. As agreed, I threw out for the first time the possibility that he should be pressed to run for the presidency of the United States with Benjamin Spock as his running mate, Dr. Benjamin Spock as his running mate, as an alternative to the Johnson war machine and the continuation of the administration. There was an overwhelming reaction, positive support to that suggestion, and Martin Martin spoke to that assembled throng. Then we began to put together the National Conference for New Politics. And I agreed to run that that last year. And that organization was the umbrella organization designed to make it all happen. It had a national convention in Chicago on Labor Day weekend, 1967. It was attended by 5,000 delegates from all over the United States. Every socioeconomic group was there. Every ethnic group in this country was represented. Every geographical area. It was the largest convention of people ever assembled in the history of this republic. And we were on the road, so we thought, to the nomination of that endorsement of that third party. So I introduced him as the keynote speaker and sat down, and as he was delivering the keynote address at the Palmer House in Chicago, I was passed a note. A note came over my shoulder, and I looked at it and I read it, and it said, "Get him out of here after he finishes his speech, or we will take him hostage and humiliate him before the world." Now, who are the we? The we were a black caucus that had been formed prior to the convention, but were in the assembly, and as every black delegate came in, they were pulled into the black caucus room and made members of the black caucus, pressed effectively into service. And we thought this was a very good thing, because we thought that the blacks in America should have unified policy and concerted effort and attention being given to the problems both rural and urban blacks faced in America, and that this was healthy, and that the rest of the contingents who were there should look at the issues that were being raised. How naive we were, because we didn't know at the time that that group had been formed and led by agents provocateurs, which had been organized by the government of the United States, Department of Labor, Mayor Richard Daley's poverty program, and were led by the Blackstone Rangers, a Chicago gang. So their whole purpose then was to disrupt the convention, make sure that it was not successful, and we didn't have a clue how naive we were. And they did that, and they were successful. They pushed through resolutions that alienated one group from another, drove money away from the movement, and ensured the fact that we were starting from a very difficult point of view. So that was a sad lesson to learn, but we believed a lot of it at the time was unfortunate, but not malicious. And it was only years later that we would learn of the government involvement through Freedom of Information Act applications. Throughout that last year of his life, however, Martin King continued to campaign against the war and to try to relate to the problems of poor people. He was killed for two reasons. One was the opposition to the war, which was powerful and growing, and going to the bottom lines of major transnational corporations who were profiting from the war, both construction companies, oil and gas companies, as well as the armaments industries. They were the ones that were going to suffer from any kind of early end to this Vietnam adventure. And Martin King was developing a support throughout the country, particularly amongst a white middle class, northern liberal, Midwestern liberal folks who were tiring of this adventure. We brought 100 Vietnamese war-injured children to the United States in the course of that year, and they were placed in hospitals all over America for the purpose of getting restorative surgery from the various bombings, effects and disfigurements and shrapnel wounds and things of that sort. Some of you who are old enough may remember photographs on posters and placards of children whose features were horribly disfigured because of the effects of the napalm in particular. Some of those photographs are mine, and some of those photographs are the reason that Martin King was moved in the first instance. So the war was a major issue, but the primary issue, I've concluded over the years, that he was taken out had to do with a whole other set of values and a whole other orientation. It had to do with his commitment to the poor people of this republic. He had to commit himself to the redistribution of wealth, the reallocation of resources, so that the wretched of America would have a chance to live. Black, white, Indian, whatever ethnic background, whatever racial background, whatever geographical area, he was trying to forge that alliance. And that was what was critical. He was getting involved now in human rights issues that spanned the entire globe. He was no longer a civil rights leader. He was now a human rights advocate and a prophet. He had been moved by the wretched situation of the poor in India in the 1960. He carried that with him, and now he was determined to do something about that in his native land. That was the ultimate goal. It was no good to have all these civil rights, you know? You could go to any restaurant you wanted to and eat in any restaurant you wanted to, and go to any hotel you wanted to. What good was that kind of right if you couldn't afford it? That was the point. So you had to enable people to enable themselves to be able to afford it. And that required assistance from government. That required the restoration of programs that had been taken away and denied because of the war. So there was the grand project. He was going to bring masses of people to the nation's capital, and they were going to camp there. Not march, camp. They were going to live in a tent city in the shadow of the Washington Memorial for as long as it took. They were going to go up the hill, visit their congressmen, their senators, and try to get these programs restored, and try to get these funds placed back into the use of the people. That was the plan. That was the second reason why he was killed, because the army believed he would not be successful. I believed that the angry mob of wretchedly poor people would get angrier, and they would get it beyond the control of this nonviolent, peaceful leader. And they would be taken over by militants who would lead a revolutionary force on the streets of the capital, the likes of which America had never seen. And America would have then its second revolution, a social revolution, for which it had been waiting for so long, which Mr. Roosevelt had frustrated in the 30s with the New Deal programs. So they feared this would happen. Westmoreland wanted 200,000 more troops in Vietnam. They didn't have the troops for him. They didn't have the troops to put down that revolution. And because of that, Martin King was not going to be allowed to bring that mob to Washington. So those were the two reasons why he was killed. Now, he was assassinated on the 4th of April, 1968, as he stood on the balcony of the Lorraine Motel.
That is Mr. Pepper discussing his association with Martin Luther King and what really caused his death. He goes on for an hour talking about the details of the assassination, including the fact that he was alive when he was taken to the hospital. And then, as a nurse would later state, as she was leaving, she looked around and two men who had been there in business suits, and the doctor put a pillow over his head and suffocated him to death. The story you haven't heard. Anyhow, you can go to prn.fm and download it. We'll be playing it tomorrow evening on the Progressive Commentary for the entire hour, just the death of Martin Luther King, what we didn't know in the exoneration of James Earl Ray. Very interesting details, and he spent 25 years full-time on it. We're out of time, everyone. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.